Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Chris Mim, Managing Director of Strategic Issues at the U.S. Government Accountability Office. So, Chris, you mentioned in our previous segment that GAO is a legislative branch agency, but it does have a strategic vision. It's not required to by Congress to do it, but it does have a strategic plan. I'd like to talk a little bit more about that. You had acknowledged that strategic issues is goal three of that plan. Could you tell us a little bit more about the strategic plan and how does it assist Congress in addressing the governance challenges of the 21st century?
We're not statutorily required to do a strategic plan or, as you mentioned, a number of other the kind of cross-cutting management requirements that are put on agencies. We believe, however, it's very important that we do that both because it's a best practice. I mean, good organizations have strategic plans. We also believe it's very important if I'm going to be out there evaluating and presumably criticizing, if I need to, an agency's lack of strategic planning or poor strategic planning, I better make sure that we have a pretty good one in GAO. We have four strategic goals. Three of those are externally facing. The third that I mentioned is the one that I operate on. And then like a lot of other organizations, we have an internal goal that's to be a world-class professional services organization on behalf of the Congress. The key thing that we try and do here is make sure that we have a document and a vision for the organization that guides us on where we can best serve the Congress both now and over the long term. And that's of absolute vital importance to us because it's how we make sure that we're focusing on the top priorities of the Congress. How do we make sure that we're effective? How do we keep our colleagues and my staff engaged in really understanding that, hey, we're working on big and important things on behalf of the American people? Our strategic plan helps us do all of that.
And Chris, you had mentioned the concept of wicked problems. And, you know, here at the center, at the IBM Center, we've kind of looked at public management issues. And some of the stuff that the government executives are facing today are seemingly intractable. And they go to the core of effective governance and leadership. What are some of those fiscal, management, and performance challenges facing today's government executive?
Well, I think certainly one of them is the wicked issues, as we talked about, and that is the incredible complexity of what we're trying to deal with, and whether it be protecting the homeland from terrorist attack, whether it be ensuring the safety of the food that we eat, you know, that whether it be addressing the problems of chronic homelessness or educating children. Again, each one of these is going to be solved or not through the combined efforts of a variety of different programs. None of these things are monocausal anymore. Everything's, in a sense, in the social science lingo, is overdetermined, you know, and so it's making sure that we attack it in a very strategic and kind of cross-cutting way. Kind of the flip side of that, then, is not surprisingly that the policy tools that government uses, the strategies, as it were, are also as varied as the problems that we're seeking to attack. And so that this is the term that's often used here, is hollow government, which is that what the federal government does in its own name in terms of direct service delivery is a small and declining part of the federal budget. Much more of it, $550 billion each year in contracts, much of that in complex acquisitions, as obviously the work that you all have commissioned is demonstrated time and time again. Over $600 billion each year that go out to state and local governments through grants, regulatory policies, you know, so the $1 trillion in tax expenditures that I mentioned. And so you have all of these indirect policy tools that are being used as the money, in a sense, moves through the intergovernmental system or moves from government to these third parties, you run into different sets of organizational cultures, different goals. It's in the jargon, it's principal agent theory is the way it's often referred to. What that means, though, is it raises fundamental questions of what does performance mean for a federal agency? What does accountability mean for a federal agency in that environment? So the first is the wicked issues. The second is the policy tools that are in the indirect form of government. The third great challenge that I see is the declining citizen confidence in government. And then the fourth great challenge, unfortunately, is all of these are playing out in an era of what looks to be long-term austerity budgeting. So you have increasing complexity, indirect policy tools, low citizen confidence in government, at the same time that we're cutting back, you know. And so it's unfortunately almost a perfect storm of very, very difficult challenge, very knotty problems that federal managers confront.
I'd like to talk about one way you at GAO try to enhance performance of government programs, and that is with the GAO's high-risk list program. It began in 1990, as I understand it.
That's right.
And could you tell us a little bit more about the goal of this list? And what are some of the key risk areas that you're talking about? And what issues have been removed from the list recently?
As you mentioned, we began it in the early 1990s, and there had been a series through the mid to late 1980s of some major public management scandals in a number of agencies. And many of these that, kind of the fundamental or the root problem had been identified and had been picked up either in GAO reports or other analysts, IG reports, whatever the case may be. And there was a sense of, geez, we need to figure out a way to better highlight these problems, to make sure that if they're crises, that we're addressing them, and for other issues that we address them before they really, in a sense, blow up on us. And so what the high risk series was designed to do was to highlight among those major areas that are vulnerable to waste, fraud, abuse, or mismanagement. Subsequently, in later years, we added or areas that were in need of fundamental transformation. And so there's a number of areas on there now that aren't waste or fraud or abuse related, but really need a big change on that. And they were designed to focus on those areas that were the most federal dollars were at risk, or human life and safety or well-being on behalf of the American people was most at risk. The original high-risk list, had 14 areas on there. Since then, we've added 41 areas. 23 areas have come off as progress is being made, and they actually come off the list. So there are 30 of them that are on there now. This includes everything from the strategic human capital management to enforcement of the nation's tax laws, the use of medical devices. The point is that in many of these areas, it gets back to those four themes that I was talking about. The root cause is an inability to work across organizational boundaries, whether it be contractors, whether it be other federal agencies. In the case of food safety, we have 15 agencies implementing 30 different food safety laws. Each one was put in place for all the right reasons. It's individually rational. The overall, though, the result is complexity and irrationality. And you see that in a number of areas. In terms of the things that we've removed, we removed two the last time. We report every 2 years with each new Congress. So we reported this last February. One was the management of interagency contracting. They had made some improvements there. And the second was the IRS's business systems modernization project. Now, in neither of those two areas is everything completed, or we're certainly not going away. They still get a lot of love and attention from the GAO in terms of audit coverage. But at least enough sustainable progress had been made that we could take them off the high-risk list. In return, we added, or not so much in return, because it's they deserve to be on there. There were two areas that were added. First was limiting the federal government's fiscal exposure by better managing climate change risks. And so this was, the federal government is really exposed because of all the costs that are associated with climate change. And so the government needs to both understand, better budget, and then manage those costs. And the second was mitigating gaps in weather satellite data. So those were the two areas that were added this last time. We'll be reporting in February of 2015 with the new Congress with an update on the areas that are on there, as well as possibly what's coming on and what's coming off.
So if that's
every 2 years with each new Congress. And we do that because it helps shape then the congressional oversight agenda.
Yeah.
What this is about is really highlighting for them what the, Justice Brandeis was saying is, sunshine was the best disinfectant. I mean, this is about that. Let's look for opportunities to really highlight and, what are some of the top issues that Congress needs to care about, hopefully in a nonpartisan way, because they're not policy issues associated with this. These are some technical governance issues, but at the end of the day, that have huge implications for the cost, safety, and well-being of the American people.
Well, Chris, one of the promises of the GPRA Modernization Act of 2010 was to enhance that cross-agency collaboration. Could you tell us a little bit about the goals of this law, and how does it enhance federal performance planning and the reporting framework?
One of the things that we were very proud of and that Congress turned to us when they were thinking about the GPRA modernization. We had done a whole body of work since the original GPRA in 1993, and I had been honored to be involved in that, right from near the very beginning to look at the original GPRA. The original GPRA, I think its great contribution was to put in place an infrastructure within agencies where agencies are now comfortable across the federal government in talking about strategic plans, annual performance plans, governance, performance reporting, talking about the difference between outputs and outcomes, talking about performance measures and kind of all the jargon and tools and techniques associated with that. But that was a real accomplishment. Where it fell down was in two very important areas. First is that despite everyone's best efforts, the original GPRA was not successful in getting agencies to work very well across organizational boundaries. That is, it wasn't successful in facilitating as we set up an outcome-oriented goal, with an outcome being defined as something you don't control, making sure the other people that are involved in contributing to that, making sure that they're part of the discussion and the equation. That it wasn't successful in that. The second thing that it largely was not successful in is, this is unfortunate, but it's true, is that, you know, we at the federal level generated just volumes and volumes and volumes of performance information. It was getting it used. We did surveys of federal managers and consistently do those surveys every couple of years to ask a series of results-oriented management questions. What they've reported every few years is that they have more and more performance information available to them. They're not actually using that in order to drive decisions, especially the outcome-oriented information. So we didn't have cross-cutting and we didn't have use. What GPRA Modernization Act was designed to do was to get a more integrated and cross-cutting perspective to federal performance and to get the information actually used. And it does that through things like the agency priority goals, the cross-agency priority goals that the administration has to set, you know, that cover multiple federal programs and agencies, through the use of the so-called STAT sessions, which originated obviously in New York City, those are required for a subset of agency goals. So it put in place a variety of requirements and mechanisms and agencies to try and get a more integrated and cross-cutting perspective and to try and get this volume of performance information used, to try and get people to let's find what works. Let's have some evidence-based policy that's going on here, which are both, you know, kind of initiatives of the administration, but let's actually use that in order to make better decisions.
And I'd like to pick up on the idea of effectiveness, plus your comment earlier about the fact that flat in the budget is a new up. And it goes around the idea that with the fiscal pressures that we are facing, the executive branch and Congress need to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of government programs and activities. You folks at GAO have looked at programs and activities that are fragmented, overlapping, or duplicative. Would you tell us about what you're doing in that area and what are some of the areas that have been identified this year?
Under a statutory mandate, we are to each year issue a report looking at overlap, duplication, and fragmentation. A comprehensive look at 162 different issue areas and have identified over 380 actions that both the administration or the Congress and or the Congress can take in order to address this fragmentation, the overlap, duplication, as well as we found, you know, areas for other cost savings or revenue enhancement opportunities. One of those, for example, is just doing much better on the tax gap. The tax gap is the difference between what is the annual difference between what is legally owed and what is actually collected by IRS. You know, that's well over a $300 billion difference each year. You know, in a sense, that's real money, and that it's also not money that it requires additional congressional or executive branch action to say, hey, we want to play with tax rates or anything like that. This is something we've already decided is legally owed. Some of that is people willfully not paying their taxes. An awful lot of that is people just honestly making mistakes due to the complexity of the tax code. So we've been very focused in recent years, and my group has had leadership for this, on how can IRS put in place the right mix of enforcement strategies and citizen service strategies in order to reduce that tax gap, because that's an enormous issue on that. In terms of overlap and duplication and fragmentation more generally, the number of program areas where there's pure overlap in a sense of the same program, same tool going to the same beneficiary or same target population is relatively infrequent. Far more frequent is overlap, which is, you know, same population but kind of different tools or program strategies that are being used there. And then even more frequent yet is fragmentation, which is a variety of different programs using different strategies that are all trying to attack a common outcome. That's why certainly in the duplication and overlap area, a lot of the success there will be the extent to which we get out of low performing or ineffective programs and move that money either to completely different areas or to higher performing programs within that same area. In the fragmentation, the solution there is very often getting agencies to work better together.
How are performance data being used to drive decisions in the federal government? We will ask Chris Mim, Managing Director of Strategic Issues at the U.S. Government Accountability Office, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.